Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the UConn Hockey Podcast. My name is Matthew, and thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Before we get started, just make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at UConn Hockey Pod, and make sure you subscribe to our Apple Podcast page and leave a rating and review, and follow us on Spotify. This helps newer viewers find us, and it helps us grow as well. So I would really appreciate it if you did that. Today, I am joined by my good friend, Kevin, basically sort of co-host now. You've been doing this, like, this might be your third or fourth time on this season, but thank you so much for coming back on the podcast, Kevin, and how's everything going?
It's going well. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you having me back on. Yeah, we're in crunch time, right? I mean, it's February. They mean stuff all year, but the games really mean a lot of stuff now. You're constantly checking, you know, the standings and pairwise, which I know we'll get to later, but it's an exciting time to be a college hockey fan.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously from a UConn perspective, they don't have many games left this year as well. I feel like they played a ton in the first half, and then they basically have like five or six more games left, if I'm not mistaken, left this year, and three of them are against UNH. So definitely be interesting to see how it all plays out. But we'll get to UNH and all that stuff later in the podcast. I want to start off just recapping the latest UConn game against Northeastern. Obviously, UConn won that one 4-3 in overtime with the Hudson-Shandor winner. I'll start with you, Kevin. What were your general thoughts on the game? We can just dive into different things after that.
Yeah. So I was actually at the Wolfpack game Friday night, but I made sure to like rewatch it, yesterday. And and it was funny because I know you and I are both in this hardcore ice bust like group chat thing on Twitter that was blowing up all night. I'm at like the Wolfpack game and I could see how the game is going just based on that. So when I rewatched it, I think a few things stood out. One was, I was impressed with Turnus, right? I mean, he kind of, we thought for sure, especially after CT Ice, that, this was kind of Sergeyev's gig, and being a one game series, you know, with Northeastern, just one game for the weekend, you kind of figured he was going to get the start, but not only did Turnus play, but he played well. He really kept us in that game. I think 36 saves on, I want to say like 39 shots or so. He played phenomenal. The one thing that was a bit of a red flag was just how they came out. The first period was kind of awful.
It was terrible. You can be honest about that.
Yeah. And like, it was such a big game, and I get it. They're on the road, and sometimes you go on the road, you got to weather the storm. But, like, I don't know, it didn't even look like a great crowd. Like, Northeastern always has a very good student section, but I feel like they don't have a lot of, they don't have a lot of, like, fans like you or I that, like, didn't necessarily go to the school. Like, if you went to Northeastern, you love Northeastern hockey, but, like, BC and BU get all, like, the casuals. They get all the bandwagon fans. Northeastern, I feel like, doesn't have that. So their crowds are never, like, too, like...
It's also, I think, isn't Matthews in, like, a terrible area in Boston?
No,
I've never been there before. That's the one way I've been there.
It's right in downtown. It's actually it's not a bad area. It's pretty nice. It's old. It's really, there's literally like radiators that they have like my parents' house. Like it's like inside the arena. You could tell it's, I think that thing was built before the Titanic sank. So and it kind of shows. But no, I mean they just, you know, like I said, BU and BC run that town, and honestly, until very recently, like Northeastern really is historically not a great program. Like, yeah, they've been in hockey East a while. They've produced, you know, some NHLers and stuff. But in terms of success, they've always been, you know, like the redhead stepchild of, like, the beanpot school. So it's really only been the last, like, you know, 4 or 5 years they've really come on quite a bit. I think the Adam Gaudette teams kind of put them on the national stage. So, I got a little sidetracked, but they came out flat. And it's like, that's a game, like, there's so much – you know, like important, so much writing on this, not only in Hockey East, but in pairwise. I would have liked to have seen a better start. And then the last thing I'll touch on is just all the penalties in the second. Granted, you know, the PK and, you know, Turnus was a big part of that, was, you know, they did their job and everything, but they just continue to take these kind of stupid penalties sometimes. So that's going to come back to bite them eventually. Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, my thoughts are sort of similar to yours. I'll be a little more positive about it because I did think the first period was absolutely brutal. Like, that could have been 4-0 Northeastern if Turnus didn't make some key saves. But I honestly thought they settled in really nicely in the second and third period. Like, I thought Northeastern had a handful of grade A chances in the first. And in the second and third period, they didn't really have too many grade A opportunities, I felt like. And I thought a big reason for that was how good the penalty kill was. They did a good job sort of keeping Northeastern on the perimeter and not letting them sort of crash the net in the slot. And then obviously Turnus made some key saves to keep them in it. And then they scored goals at the right time. And the one thing I really like about this team is they always take advantage of the opportunities that they've had. It's been a theme for them all year. Obviously the first score was off like a weird sort of bounce, but they took advantage of that. And then they've done a really good job crashing the crease. Three out of four UConn goals were pretty much crashing the crease when Shandor got the rebound to tie up the game. Woods' goal in the third period to give them the lead. And then obviously the OT winner was sort of similar to that, as well as Shandor crashed the crease and sort of slipped it through Levi's five hole. So I really liked how they sort of took advantage of those opportunities, found a way back in this game, and ultimately got a result out of it. It seems like a theme for this team. They've been doing that all year, but it's always a lot of fun to watch. And even though they did have a bad first period, I'm just glad they got a result out of the game.
Yeah, pair-wise, it kind of kills you going in overtime as opposed to, like, the regulation win or whatever. But
it's better than losing in overtime all the time, though.
Yeah, oh, no, absolutely. But that's what I was going to say. Like, this team is so good in overtime. Like, I don't know off the top of my head. I don't know if you know, like, what our overtime record is this year. God knows.
I think it's 6-1-1, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's what they said on the broadcast.
Yeah, so good in overtime. That really helps us. Those extra points in Hockey East are huge. And, this team just find ways to win. You know, like, you gotta give them credit where it's due, for sure. So.
Yeah, and obviously the penalty kill was fantastic, and the special teams really won them this game. Obviously the penalty kill killing, I think, 6 or 7 penalties in this entire game. And then I think some power play goals, the one that Shandor had to tie up the game when Northeastern couldn't get any power play goals, and then Shandor got his. Obviously, when you win the special teams battle, it gives you a huge advantage no matter how poorly you played. So that was something that has been really impressing me about this UConn team as of late, is how good the penalty kill is, but the power play has improved a lot. I have to find the stat that Adam Giardino tweeted out about how good the UConn power play has been in the last, like, 12 games. I think it's been moved up, like, 10% in the last 12 games, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know if you saw that tweet or not.
No, I didn't catch that one. But you're right, it has been good, and I love how Matthew Wood's been coming on too. The beginning of the year, I thought he was kind of on fire, and then he almost hit like that freshman lull for a little bit. And then, you know, he's been
their best player in the second half, in my opinion.
Oh yeah. I would agree with that too. I think he's been huge, and he's that difference maker. Like I said at the beginning of the year, like and I don't want to get ahead of myself because there's still everything to play for this year, but I do feel like he is the type of player that can have that, like, Cale Makar, like, sophomore season.
That's what I think is going to happen next year.
Yeah, like, if he comes back, and I'd be pretty shocked if he left,
Some people are saying, depending on the team that drafts him, he could leave after this year, which I hope doesn't happen.
It's definitely a possibility. I mean, when you're that high of a prospect, for sure. So, and you got to look, too. I mean, there's some franchises that don't value college as high as juniors. Look at Jan Kuznetsov with Calgary. Like, I mean, he ended up, you know, he signed pro with Calgary. They put him in the AHL, and I think it was with Stockton. He was playing with a little bit, but then they sent him back to juniors. And granted, you can't get sent back to college once you, like, turn pro or whatever, but still, like, you almost feel like that was almost part of the plan because he wasn't NHL ready, and Calgary knew that. So I think they kind of favor some franchises definitely favor, like, the junior route as opposed to college. So, if he comes back next year, I really think he can set the world on fire for sure. So.
Yeah. So here's the tweet. So UConn men's hockey power play, first 16 games, 7 for 63, 11.1%. The last 12 games, they're 12 for 42, 28.6%. That's just shows you how much the power play has improved, in the second half of the year.
Yeah. And you need special teams this time of year. Like, you know, the penalty kill has been great all year. I'd like to have to, rely on it a little less, but it's been fantastic. And that power play, I mean, if you can get that clicking, go ahead and into the playoffs, let me tell you, watch out.
Yeah, and obviously Devin Levi really kept Northeastern in this game. I honestly could have been like a 6-3 UConn, like, win. Like, there were so many chances that he pretty much found a way to make the save. So got to tip your cap to Devin Levi. He had a really good game, and yeah, the only three bad takeaways I have from this game were, one, UConn got killed in the faceoff dot again. I feel like that's really going to bite them in the butt at some point because one thing that UConn does well is they do a great job taking the puck away in the defensive zone. So sometimes those faceoff losses aren't as bad as they seem. But when you play a team like Minnesota in the tournament, if you lose like 35 faceoffs, they're going to win like 5 or 6-0. So you can't have that happen. So that's something I want them to fix. And like what you said, the unnecessary penalties. Like, I love Nick Capone. He does a lot of good things, but then he takes a stupid penalty and it's just like, what are you doing, man? And then I will say the Chase Bradley one. I know he's sort of taken some bad penalties as of late. The guy like completely flopped. Like, he deserved an Oscar for that. That was so bad, but just trying to take away those unnecessary penalties. Cause yes, the penalty kill has been good, but you also don't want to rely upon it every single game. And then the bad start. It was a trend in the first half of the year that I didn't like, and then they sort of fixed it in the second half of the season, but you don't want that trend coming back towards the end of this year. So as long as they sort of fix those three things up, I think this team is in a good place heading into the hockey's playoffs.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point with the faceoffs, because like you said, you're going to face a team, whether it's in the hockey's playoffs or, you know, I'd love for it to be the NCAA tournament, that – you know, especially we're talking about special teams on a penalty kill. If you don't win that faceoff, there's some teams in this country that puck ain't leaving the zone for 2 minutes. Like, you, faceoffs are huge. So, like you said, I think our defensemen and you know are have done a good job kind of handling that and everything. But like, it's gonna bite us sooner or later. It's something that we're just not very good at this year. And granted, I mean, the grand scheme of things, if there's something you're gonna suck at, you know, like faceoffs is lower on the totem pole, so it's not the end of the world. But you know, against the better teams, like you said, it will bite us. So,
now I do want to recap this Connecticut Ice tournament because we didn't get to do it. Last time we had the podcast, we were talking, previewing the CT Ice tournament. So let's talk about it a little bit and just the aftermath of it all. So obviously UConn had a tough loss to Quinnipiac, losing 4-3. Honestly, though, I thought they had a really good tournament. They showed me a lot. I think it was one of those things where just Quinnipiac was just sort of the more experienced and better team at the end of the day, and they just found a way to win that game. But there was a lot of good things to take away from. I love seeing them kick Yale's ass. That was a lot of fun. It's always fun seeing a good blowout. And then I really thought they played well against Quinnipiac. Just unfortunately, you know, Ethan DeYoung's such a good player, and he had a good snipe to tie up the game. And then, unfortunately, just a bad bounce went Quinnipiac's way. So, but overall, I had a lot of positive things to take away from the CT Ice Tournament. It just sucks that it doesn't really help UConn in the pairwise, because that beating Quinnipiac would have been huge for that. So it's just one of those things where it sucks, but I really liked the way they played. So there wasn't a lot of negatives, for at least for me, to take away from that whole weekend.
I agree wholeheartedly. The one negative, like you touched on, was just, I think if we win that game, I don't think there's any doubt we make the NCAA tournament. I think that would have given us a big enough boost in pairwise that we would have really had to have kind of shit the bed to miss it. So that was the one negative. But in terms of Friday, I didn't go. I had to work, and it was like a 4 o'clock start, but I watched every minute on television on SNY, and yeah, that was just fun. Like, they did what they had to do against, you know,
what happened to Yale? They won a national tournament like 10 years ago. Like, it makes no sense. Like, they've fallen so far off since they won that championship.
I know, and to think they're the only team in Connecticut that's half the national championship too. So no, I agree. Yeah, they've totally fallen off. And then the Quinnipiac game, so that Yale game was actually the first game of Connecticut Ice I've ever missed in this tournament. Like, I've driven through blizzards. I've been at every one. That was the first one I missed. It was a little, you know, lackluster this year with like the TV thing. Everyone didn't know what was going on with SNY until like a day before. And, Quinnipiac was hosting. It wasn't Bridgeport. It was just kind of weird. So, so I was there for the Quinnipiac for the championship game, and having, like I said, been to everyone, that was the first time I think I can ever honestly say, I think UConn was a better team. Like, that is the first time we've ever played Quinnipiac where we were the more physical team. Quinnipiac is that team that just throws weight all over the ice. They're in your face. They're borderline dirty. The Rand Pecknold teams have that's like their kind of, you know, noticing factor or whatever. Like, they're like defining trait is like they play with that edge, but it doesn't always go over. They toe the line pretty good. And UConn was pushing them around. Like, I was so impressed that entire game.
They had a bad start, but they settled in, and then they got that 3-2 lead heading in. But, and heading into the third, I'm like, all right, they might actually find a way to win this game, because they've been doing that all year.
Yeah, but, like, they you know, even when they were behind, like, they weren't playing that bad. I thought the game was there. Like, Quinnipiac, two of those goals were just absolute snipes. Like, those toe drags. And like,
oh, yeah.
Like, those were just filthy. Like, those are the ones you just got to take your hat off, you know, like tip your cap. Like, you know what? That was nasty. It's not, you know, it wasn't Sergei's fault. It wasn't, you know, the defenseman's fault. Like, that was just, they were great plays. Yeah, I mean, it sucked because, like, in years past when we've lost to Quinnipiac, I'm like, you know what? They're the better team. They're a damn good team. Like, you know, that's okay. You know, this year, that should have been UConn. Like, actually, I do have a second negative. I think the one thing that really killed me was when we were down a goal, the last, like, minute of the game, that was, like, a clinic on how not to, like, play down.
Oh, yeah.
There was no game plan. Like, they couldn't get the puck deep. There was, it was a hot mess. Like, it was that last minute or so when they were, like, trying to, like, tie the game up. It was literally a clinic on how not to do that. So, that's the only other negative. But overall, I was very happy with how they played. Because if Quinnipiac truly is a top five team, then, I'm sorry, we're right there with them. You know, like, you could argue about where Quinnipiac is, but we were every bit as good as them, if not better.
I will say if there are any number one seed to lose in the tournament, it's definitely Quinnipiac, just based on their strength of schedule. So I think that's something to look out for when the tournament comes around.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. But you know what, too? I mean, you also, if you're a one seed, that means they're probably going to put you somewhere favorable location-wise so you can have fans come. And you're also going to get a four seed, so maybe you get, like, an RIT or someone. So that, you know, that's the one thing that makes Quinnipiac great. Like, it's not that they're constantly beating the Duluths and the Denvers of the world. It's that they handle their business against the ECAC teams and, like, the lesser teams out of, like, Atlantic Hockey and stuff like that. Like, that's what makes them great. So, you know, yeah, I could see them getting upset because I definitely think if they're a one seed, they're the weakest. But it all depends on the draw, too.
I don't know. I said that last year about Minnesota State. I didn't think they were that good because I thought their strength of schedule was kind of weak, but then they made it all the way to the national championship. And I think Dryden McKay is sort of similar to Yanni Peretz, like really two really solid goalies that can carry their team. So I could be wrong about that, but it's definitely something interesting to look out for in March.
Agreed.
Now, I do want to talk about the aftermath of the CTI's tournament because I feel like not enough people, at least not enough media people, are talking about it. So obviously, like you sort of mentioned in your thing, this was sort of a last minute tournament. We didn't know where it was going to be broadcast until pretty much Friday morning, honestly. And we also knew that was going to be played in Quinnipiac, but there was issue with the ticketing. Like, I know Rand Pecknell came out like on Monday, like saying like, oh, like Jimmy Connolly, like stop making false claims. Like this, we did sell tickets to the ADs of the other schools, but this whole thing seemed like it was sort of patched together last minute, and I think for this type of tournament you sort of need better planning months in advance to help make it better, because I do think this tournament has the chance to be very successful, because I do think Connecticut's a great hockey market and state, and I really want this thing to sort of be like the 1A or 1B to the Beanpot in college hockey and season tournaments.
Yeah, and you know, and the one thing I liked was in his post-game presser, like, Cav, like, kind of stuck to his guns and was like, you know, I think this should be played at the XL Center. Like, not as, like, an advantage to UConn, but as, like he said, we're doing ourselves a disservice only selling, you know, whatever, 3,600 tickets or whatever it was. You know, and it's like, if the four schools included in their season ticket packages, which it was not in this year for UConn, you know, you got to figure we have, what, 1,800 about that. You know, I'm sure Yale might be lucky if they have 500. Same thing with Sacred Heart. So maybe 1,000.
Sacred Heart might loot and gain some. That arena looks great.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure they're gaining some with the new arena. But conservatively, we'll say 1,000 between those two schools. And then you got to figure Quinnipiac's got at least 1,000 by themselves. So you figure that, you know, that's a solid, like, 4,000, you know, ish base. You know, that right there exceeds what, you know, Hampton can even hold. And that's not even including, like, the casual fans and the walk-ups and stuff like that. And it's like, if you market that more than, I don't know, you know, 24 hours in advance, get crazy, you know, actually, like, pour some advertising into it, there's no reason you can't get 8,000-9,000 at the Civic Center for that. So, yeah, I mean, I don't care if it's Bridgeport or Hartford. I think Hartford is more ideal. It's a state capital or whatever, but, you know, but, like, it needs to be in kind of that neutral, so to speak, venue, and it needs to be – and they got to figure out, too, like, when the ideal time is to have that tournament, you know.
It should not be in late January. I'm sorry. It's my one big complaint is, like, why are you doing this in the middle of your push run in the conference play? I think this would be perfect. Instead of having the LIU series in end of December, have the CTI's tournament. That's my ideal spot because it's not the Beanpot yet. Even though I want it to be, it's still not that – And I think it'll be a nice little fun holiday tournament to have in December because you're not competing with the NFL, which is part of the reason why SNY dropped it in the first place.
Yeah, and I agree too. I think it should either be like the last game before break or the first game after break. I think that's probably like ideal, like somewhere around there or something. So around the same time you were saying, but yeah, just like, yeah, I said this in like the group message. The most frustrating part about it is it really wouldn't take that much to make this event super successful. I just feel like it's been run by a bunch of clowns lately and like, like they just need to like it. If they put the littlest bit of effort into this thing. And that's the other part too. Like, you know, even Benedict, who I love, the guy's been phenomenal. He's really gotten behind this hockey program. At the end of the day, like hockey is a non-revenue sport. And it's tough when, you know, you got two, you know, NCAA top 25 basketball programs, you know, football is coming off a bowl game or whatever. Like, you know, yeah, I'm sure the hockey team is unfortunately fairly mid-level on his list of priorities. So, like, I don't know that this is the type of thing that he's, you know, going to be thinking about in, like, you know, July and August when he should be thinking about it. Like, hey, how can we make CTIs more successful? Like, what can we do? So that's kind of the unfortunate part, I think.
Yeah, and I feel like Rand Pecknold had it all wrong in his tweet. Like, people weren't complaining about the ticketing. It was more about the communication. Like, people didn't know, like, what it was going to look like until, like, a day before. And I feel like the communication should have improved better. And I love Mark Diver. He's one of my favorite journalists. I think he does an incredible job, but I feel like he missed the point too. It's like people aren't complaining about how the tickets were. It was more just about the communication, how there wasn't a lot of effort into it. And frankly, it was a Quinnipiac advantage. Like they found a way to, because what Hurley Mania was saying to me was how Quinnipiac's ticketing system isn't that great unless you are from Quinnipiac and know it because it's very outdated. So, like, from, if you're an outside fan, it's going to be hard to get tickets if you're not sure, like, how that all works and if it's not being communicated to you. So I don't think Quinnipiac bought tickets, but they definitely didn't do a good enough job communicating to how it's going to work to other fans from the other schools, which they should have done. And I feel like Mark, Rand, and all the other people sort of missed that point. People aren't trashing Quinnipiac. I just have a lot of respect for that school. We're just saying that it needs to be better communication to the other schools about how this tournament's going to be run.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, if Quinnipiac hosts, yeah, they were going to have more fans than everyone else. Like,
I agree, which is fine, but just communicate that though. Like, exactly. Here's how you get tickets. Here's where it's going to be broadcasted. Here's the trophy. Like, that, I didn't know anything about it until a week before, which is frustrating.
And the other thing was, even just Quinnipiac hosting, like, that may have came out a few weeks, maybe a month beforehand. Like, that was very, like, that was not known at the beginning of the season. Like, no one knew. Like, I remember asking, like, something on, like, the coach show, and, like, no one, like, knew. Like, you know, like, I had heard at the beginning of the year, like, it wasn't going to be a Bridgeport, but, like, it was just going to be home venues. So, like, I didn't know if that meant – no one knew what that meant, whether it was, you know, we were going to host Yale and Quinnipiac was going to host Sacred Heart and then we'd meet somewhere. Like, no one freaking knew. It was poorly handled, the whole thing.
Yeah, it definitely needs to be improved for next year. And, yeah, no, I totally agree with you on that. But I also think people, like – I don't know, people complain a lot, but I felt like there were some complaints that were valid and people weren't just taking them seriously, which I think is frustrating as a UConn fan.
I agree.
Now let's preview the upcoming game against UNH. Obviously, I think I was checking the schedule. UConn's next 3 out of 4 games are against UNH, and they don't have really that many games left. And I feel like a lot of people are going to say, like, oh, these are just guaranteed wins, but I think it's really hard to beat a team in hockey 3 times, and UNH has been playing very well as of late. They recently, I think, beat Merrimack in overtime on Friday, if I'm not mistaken. So
Yep. They've
been playing well as of late. They know they beat Providence last month. They beat Sacred Heart. They've been playing very well. They have a lot of talented players, I feel like, on that roster. I don't think this is going to be, like, an easy series for UConn, especially on the road. And I can totally see UConn dropping one of these 3 games, which is going to kill their power-wise.
Yeah, you had messaged the group thing on Twitter, and I could not have agreed more. Like, UNH has really played. They beat Lowell, I think, yesterday 5-4. They beat Merrimack 3-2 in overtime on Friday. Then a couple weeks ago on the 15th of January, they beat UMass. Like, the only thing in there was they got swept by Lowell in between there, but like, they've won 3 out of their last 5. So these are not, like, and they, even before that, they beat Sacred Heart 4-1. They beat Providence 2-0. So, gosh, that's even better. So they've won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of their last 7. So they're playing really well. And quite frankly, like you said, I don't give a damn how bad they are. To ask a team to beat them three in a row is a tall task. Like, you could give me Mercyhurst, you know, three games in a row. It's going to be tough to win three straight. So, like, not to sound negative, but I don't think there's any chance UConn sweeps all three in regulation. I don't think they're coming out of this with three regulation wins. And to your point, the downside of that is, like, no matter how hot they are, pairwise doesn't give a shit. You know, right now, like, they're not a very good team. I think they're 47th right now in pairwise, something like that. So, like, if a loss to UNH is going to easily knock us out of the top 16. I think we're 15th right now. There's no way we stay top 16 with a loss to New Hampshire. Not to mention two games are on the road, like both games this weekend are both in Durham. So it's tough because, like I said, I could easily see us going 2-1 in this, which is fine. I mean, you know, 2 out of 3, but it's going to hurt. Because we're not going to get credit for beating the number 47 team in pairwise, but that loss is going to be a real kick. So it's a rough situation. If anything other than three regulation wins, UConn fans are not going to be happy about the pairwise result.
Yeah, and they obviously have that game, which we'll talk about next episode against Alaska, so you have four games against low pairwise teams, and it's going to be hard to sort of win all four of those in regulation. Hopefully they prove me wrong at least on that, but it's definitely a tough task, but we'll get to that next week. But sort of getting back to UNH, obviously they had a terrible first half of the season. I don't think they won a Hockey East game until like January. But even if you look at those first half of the season games, they definitely gave some team some really trouble. Like, it was very close games. And I'm interested to see how they do this weekend. Just some players to look out for. Their best player is a freshman. His name's Simon Leclerc. He has 20 points in 28 games. Liam Devlin, a sophomore, he has 19 points in 28 games. And then Colton Heward, he's also a sophomore. He has 16 points in 28 games. So it seems like they're definitely a younger team. It seems like those players are starting to figure out college hockey. And I think that's part of the reason why they've been having a much better second half than a first half this season.
Yeah, for sure. I knew they were young coming into it. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be it's going to be tough. I'm going up Saturday. I'm going to go up to Durham for I think it's 4 o'clock. It's like an afternoon game. So I'll be there for that one. Hopefully they get the job done Friday. And then, it's a tall task. You know, like you said, it's 3 out of 4. It's not three straight, but two on the road for a team that's playing super well. They're as confident as can be, you know, beating, you know, coming off, you know, 5 out of 7 wins or whatever for a team that really sucked in the first half. Would have liked to have seen the 3-game series back in like November or something. Yeah. But yeah, so.
Yeah, I don't know why UConn plays UNH 3 times every year. It should be UMass. That makes more sense geographically. It's a better rivalry. It's the one thing I want to talk to the hockey schedule people about. I'm like, why UNH 3 times a year? Like, it makes no sense at all. Can it please be against UMass? That's all what UConn fans are asking for.
Yeah. And we always get the Boston schools too, I feel like, too. It's like, you know, which is fine, but like they're always the better schools, so.
Yeah, so. No. Now, they have two goalies. One of them's played a lot more games. His name's David Fezzeden. He's played 21 games this year. He's 6-12-0 with the 2.64 goals against average and a .912 save percentage. We're definitely going to see him this weekend, I assume. And then they have another goalie named Tyler Mazelek. He's a freshman. We might see him in one of these next 3 games. He's played 10 games, a 3-6-1 record with a 3.84 goals against average and a .864 save percentage. So he might play one of those games, but those numbers are definitely not great. But I will say he's a Florida Panthers draft pick, and he also played for the U.S. NTDP team. So he definitely has a lot of potential. He might have just been brought in a year too early, it seems like.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I mean, to get, you know, an NTDP player, I mean, that's cream of the crop. Those are the best Americans, you know, coming up through the ranks. So that was huge. I did see that. And honestly, that's what UConn's had to do. That's why we have Matthew Wood as the youngest place, you know, player in college hockey. Cause, you know, they always say that extra year of juniors, it leaves, you know, time to be poached by bigger schools. I'm sure UNH, you know, it's been a long, long time since their glory days. So I'm sure they run into the same thing and want to bring him early. So, it's going to be a tough series. There's no doubt we're the better team, but, you know, that doesn't always count pairwise. It's about you got to win these games, you got to get results. So we'll see what happens.
And obviously the key for UConn in this series is the convergence of Hudson Shandor and Matthew Wood. I mentioned how I think Matthew Wood's been the best UConn player in the second half. Just some great goals. Ever since the LIU series, I feel like he's been their best player, in my opinion. And then also, got to give Hudson Shandor a shout-out. He's been fantastic as of late. He's really emerged as one of UConn's top players as well. He reminds me of a mini Condoleezza because he's doing better in the face-off top, but he also gets those dirty goals. And I think he's a great passer as well. So those two have just been fantastic for UConn, and they need to be fantastic again if UConn wants to have success against UNH this weekend.
Yeah, you know, what... It's funny, in the beginning there, you saw, like, those flashes of, like, potential, whether it was his shot or just, you know, he uses his body well. He's a big kid, even though he's young. He protects the puck well, and he's kind of tough to knock off it. So you saw that it's more so just a consistency thing, at least in the beginning of the year. Now he's kind of really turning it on. He's found his groove, and he's got that confidence going. So, yeah, I mean, he's starting to live up to the hype for sure. So hopefully he keeps that rolling. And Hudson, I mean... He's been great all year. I think the last, like, you know, kind of few games, he's really come on, especially on the score sheet. I thought that game against to open up Toscano against Northeastern, I thought he played well. Ever since that game, I think he's pretty much been on a tear, almost like he took that loss kind of personal, and he's really turned it on. So he's a great kid. I mean, he was actually one of the ones that came, it was him, Torberg, and Spetz that came over to ice skate our tailgate that we had for the opener and everything. And you know, he's just a really polite kid, really nice. And yeah,
I love how hype he gets after every goal. He's always like yelling at it. It gets me hyped too watching it.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's easy to root for sure. So hopefully, you know, the two of them can turn up. The one that, like, you know, makes me like scratch my head is Torberg, because like every game he like blows by. So his speed is just unreal. Like
the goal against him against Yale was incredible.
Yeah, and like you, he's another one. Like, you see those flashes, and you just wish he was a little more. Sometimes he takes as many stupid penalties as Capone. Sometimes maybe not as many, but his are just as.
He had a stretch there, like in the middle of the year, where he was taking a lot, like the Vermont or the bowl game. The last time we had you on the pod, I was like three in a row. I think he had, and it was like, oh my gosh, like this is just tough to watch.
And so, like, you know, he has these moments, but he has that speed that, like, there's some defensemen hockeys. I mean, they, you know, he makes them look stupid. He just goes right around them. And you'd like
the goal he had against UMass. Sorry to interrupt, but he basically just burned Scott Morrow and then buried that one timer.
Like, you just like to see it translate to the score sheet a little bit more, like, because I feel like he's got that in him. I don't think that's an unfair expectation. So.
Yeah, for sure. I do want to ask you about the goaltending a little bit, because last time we had you on. You were talking about how you thought Turnus was the guy, but it seems like as of late you're starting to lean towards Sergeyev. I'm curious where you're at, because I feel like they're definitely going to have a goalie at some point for the playoffs. Like, you can't do the rotation during playoffs. It seems like Cavs leaning more Sergeyev, but I think Turnus is going to make it interesting in the end of the second half.
Yeah, I mean, it's just now that I've seen, you know, what are we, probably 2/3 of the year, maybe 3/4, you know, like, and having seen them both, they're just a little bit different, like, stylistically, like, and it's kind of what we knew in the beginning. Like, you know, like, I feel like Logan is just very, like, structurally sound. He's always in position. He doesn't necessarily make flashy saves, but, like, he gets the job done. He's very consistent, looks very calm back there. Where Sergeyev is, you know, almost a freak athletically. He, you know, moving side to side, you know, he plays that style that he comes out, you know, challenges, cuts off the angle quite a bit more than Logan. They're just kind of contrasting. And the one area I really haven't seen much separation is, like, playing the puck. I'd be interested to see what Cavs' thoughts on that are. But yeah, I mean, I think Sergey, he definitely gives you that feeling of, like, higher ceiling. I think the ceiling on Sergey is higher than Logan. But at the same time, like, I feel like Logan has a higher floor. Like, you just kind of know what you're going to get out of him. I think Sergeyev can make those flashy saves. He could steal some, you know, every save something he's not supposed to every now and then. Whereas, you know, Logan, he's going to stop everything he sees, but he might not, like, you know, make that. He doesn't always have that clutch save for me, although, you know, he might have proved me wrong last night against Northeastern a couple times. But, you know, Sergeyev, I don't know. I think that's the best way to put it. I think Sergeyev is a higher ceiling. I think Logan has a higher floor in terms of what you're going to get from him. So.
Yeah, I'm interested to see who will, because I think at playoff team, you got to pick one guy. Right now, I'm still leaning towards Sergeyev because at the end of the day, I feel like he will steal you a playoff game. I think Logan, yeah. There's still some question marks with that, but we'll have to see, obviously, as things play out. I think that BC series is going to be huge for who gets that start.
I think they're going to split this weekend again, and then I'll be, you know, and then I get, well, I guess because the Alaska game is the same week as the other UNH game. So, yeah, they might end up splitting that too. I don't know. It'll be, although you got to figure priority wise, UNH being a Hockey East game is probably a bigger, you know, a bigger game than Anchorage. So, you know, maybe he goes, tips his cap a little again, you know, like he did with CT Ice and starts Sergeyev against the third game against UNH and gives Turnus, you know, Anchorage, who is, yeah, I get the upset Lowell and everything, but they're not a very good team. And it's also not Hockey East points. So, that might be a little bit something to just keep an eye on, too.
Yeah, we'll talk about Anchorage next podcast episode and how we're going to find a way to get into that game. That's going to be interesting from your perspective.
Oh, I'll be there. I just got to figure out.
Now, one more thing about UConn before the end of the pod is their pairwise standing. You sort of mentioned this earlier, but they're now 15th in pairwise, which means they are in the tournament if no conference playoff upsets happen. Last season, Ohio State was 15th. They didn't win the Big Ten. And since Harvard won the ECAC, they did not make the national tournament. So UConn's the first pickoff if a team upsets in this conference tournament. If the national tournament, obviously if the pairwise stood as it is today, obviously it's good that they're in 15th. But at the same time, they're definitely going to be a bubble team, it seems like, at the end of the second. It seems like they're going to be a bubble team at the start of the Hockey's playoffs. Unless they sort of win every single game, maybe they can sort of sneak into that 11 or 10 range. But definitely something that, I don't know. I'm happy that they're in the pairwise spot, but I'm not comfortable with it just because I feel like it's so fluid right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not remotely comfortable. And like I said, I think the chances of us sweeping all three against UNH are very slim. So I'm not very confident at all in regards to pairwise, unfortunately. Omaha is right on our heels at 16. How is Notre Dame 17? They're a game under 500. I don't know how
it's
they're
because 17. There's like five Big Ten teams in the top 15, so their wins have more weight than UConn's does. That's just a conference thing, from what I was told.
Which I get, but I don't know. I'd have to see what they did in the non-conference, because to me that's a joke. Like, if you're a game under 500, you shouldn't be anywhere near the tournament. Like,
I'll look it up right now.
Same thing with Michigan State. Michigan State's two games over 500, and they're a spot ahead of us in pairwise. Like that, like, I don't know. Like, Ohio State's been good. They're 17 and 10. You know, Penn State's been really good. They're 19 and 10. Michigan's 18 and 9. Like, those are all fair, but like, Michigan State is two games over 500. Notre Dame is one game under, and they're both top 17 in pairwise.
So Notre Dame beat Western Michigan. So that's definitely a big reason for it. And then they also beat Boston College. But they lost to Alaska Fairbanks, so yeah, no, I don't know what. It's definitely got to be their conference wins, because I know like the Big Ten has like five teams in the tournament as of right now.
And it was like that last year, Chad. Didn't the Big Ten get a ton of teams in last year too?
I know they got Michigan, Minnesota. I'm trying to think who else. Ohio State, I know, didn't get in.
Oh yeah.
I think it might have. There's another team there. I'm forgetting. I think it might have been Notre Dame. Yeah, it was. It was Notre Dame, yeah. Michigan, and Minnesota. So I think they got three teams in. I think it was the NCHC got four the most out of in last year's tournament.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That's weird. And like, I get it. It's a system. There's got to be, you know, some reasoning behind it. But, and then the other thing was RIT dropping out. It's almost like with RIT, like I know there were people like saying, like cheering on like the RIT loss against Canisius or whatever. But like, if RIT is out, that means Atlantic Hockey is automatically taking the 16 spot. That champ is stealing a bit. Whereas if RIT was in, and assuming they won Atlantic Hockey, they wouldn't actually be a bid stealer. There would be no bid stealer from Atlantic Hockey. So that's actually, you know, I think it was Mark and Matt were saying that's a double-edged sword. Because, like, best case scenario, truly best case scenario, would be RIT is in the top 16 and they win Atlantic Hockey. Then they don't steal anyone's bid. Whereas if they drop out, then they're automatically kicking out the 16th place team. So it's a double-edged sword is all I'm saying.
You want to talk about no room for error. If they lose any of those Atlantic Hockey games, they're pretty much out of it because a lot of those schools are really low on the pair wise.
Yep. No, totally. They have to. RIT's been good this year, though. But, yeah, no, you're right. You're right on with that. So
underrated fan base. I will give them that. They have great fans at RIT. I don't know if you've ever seen them before.
I saw when they – well, I haven't been up there, but I saw them when they came to Hartford a few years back. I think we beat them, like, 2-1 or something like that. So
yeah, just a good fan base. They always show up for these road games. Like, it's small, but it's good. It's a loyal group. I like those RIT. And those jerseys are great, too. One of the best in Atlantic Hockey.
Yeah, orange and black is a cool combo. I like that.
Either them or Air Force. That's the best jersey combination in Atlantic Hockey, in my opinion.
Air Force? Eh.
I like the blue. That's probably why.
Yeah, that's fair. I kind of like the Holy Cross, the purple, especially if they put, like, the Crusader on there. I like that.
I like the full purple. The home jersey, when it just says Holy Cross, is like, you could do better than that. That's my one thing with them.
Yeah.
Favorite jersey in Hockey East? I know I don't want to, like, have the chit-chat at the end, but I'm just curious.
In Hockey East.
Not UConn, I'll say that.
It's got to be Maine. I think Maine
the
is
road
just
Maine is the best, yeah.
Yeah, that sky blue and the cursive script. I got to go with Maine.
Yeah, I've thought about getting that jersey because it's so good. And Vermont's new road jersey looks great, too. I was watching it the other day. The green, that looks great.
Vermont, they have more, like, third jerseys than, like, any school in hockey. I love, they have so many with, like, the logos. They have like, the big circular logo. They got UVM. They have Vermont across. Like, they have more variety than any team in hockey. So I'll give them that.
Yeah, every time I feel like UConn wears an alternate, though, they lose. So that's why I feel like they stick with the just blue and white.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because they wore the alternate against BU at the end of the first half, and they lost. And then they wore the Connecticut jersey in Frozen Fenway, and they lost. Those are the only two alternate jerseys they've won this year.
You know, fun fact, I will say, there's only one other jersey in Hockey East that I own besides UConn. And this is because I know you followed the program before they were even in Hockey East, right? Like, I think you grew up, like, going to the game.
Yeah. I was, there's a photo of me at Freitas. Yeah. Before UConn Air Force in 2012. So I have that proof that I've been a fan for a long time.
Yeah. So, like, I always followed UConn from, like, afar, but I didn't really get into them until they announced the move to Hockey East. And then I just went, like, kind of balls in. But before that, I always loved college hockey all throughout, like, high school and college and everything. But you know what team I actually grew up, like, rooting for? Like, just as, like, a random, like, college hockey, like, interest? UNH. And I actually have a UNH jersey, and I'm going up there for the first time on Saturday to see him. Hopefully lose to our Huskies. But I want a team that was, you know, that was good. I didn't like the Boston schools. In UNH back in, like, you know, circa, this would be like between like 2002, 2012, probably.
Bobby Butler.
they were always like in the tournaments. Almost every year they were really, you know, good in Hockey East and stuff like that. And I needed someone, cause you couldn't watch UConn on TV unless you went to Freitas. I mean, you weren't going to watch UConn. So, I just always kind of, so they got a little small piece of my heart, UNH, but you know, once UConn moved up, now that first ever Hockey East playoff series, I still remember when they swept us in that. So, well,
yeah,
don't love them as much anymore.
Yeah, I posted a highlight clip of Cody Sharup's goal when he did the Cowboy Selly, and I was looking through some old stuff, and I found out that I had autograph from him from one of my first games I ever went to when he was a freshman. He was still in Atlantic Hockey, and he signed, like, some poster that I had, so I was like, that's pretty cool, so I want to say that.
Oh, that's cool. You know what I have? They just stopped this either this year or the year before, probably the last 2 years since it's, like, COVID, but for years, the hockey team would always go to a football game at Rentschler one year, and they do a signing.
The women's team did this last week. I was like, can we do it with the men's? I kind of want to meet some of these guys.
Yeah, and so I got one every single year. Like, all the years Tage was here, I probably have Tage on two of them, Max, like, all the boys. Like, I always used to get that. I used to love, like, meeting all the guys and everything before a game at the Rent. That was fun, so.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of former players, I had the chance to see Carter Turnbull, Johnny Evans, and Kevin O'Neill with South Carolina. They were in New England, so I was like, I got to go see them play. Always a pleasure, and they did recognize me. Kevin O'Neill, like, he was skating up during warm-ups. He, like, saw my UConn jersey and started smiling and nodding, and then Carter did the same thing as well. So I want to give them a shout-out, and they'll definitely be on the podcast this summer. I'm going to try to reach out to them and schedule something because I would love to hear what their thoughts on were on the 2022 postseason run.
That's awesome. I love that. Yeah, I made sure to – did you go up to Worcester? Is that where it was?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I always – I made sure to see Yakim and Wyatt when they came to play the Wolfpack. And it's a weird rumor of the Wolfpack now. Bobby Trevino's on our team, so, you know, big Bobby T guy now. But it's cool seeing all the old Hockey East guys, you know, like, come in, play like the Wolfpack and stuff like that. Or even if it's the East Coast League, it's you know, to see, like, especially former UConn guys is awesome. So hopefully there'll be more in the future, and hopefully more in the pros too, in the NHL, I should say. But
yeah, Kevin O'Neill looked good. Same with Johnny Evans and Carter. Like, they look like AHL players. And I know Kevin got called up recently this year, so hopefully they get their chance at some point, at least in the AHL. And I know that Johnny scored when I saw him play, so I feel like at some point they'll at least be AHL players, because I honestly thought they were good players with UConn and had the potential to be good pro players after they graduate.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think they could definitely make it to the AHL too. Even, it's funny about the Wolfpack, that their All-Star game tonight, or the skills is tonight, the All-Star game tomorrow for the American Hockey League, and the Wolfpack representative is Zach Jones, who won the national championship with UMass. So, you know, and Bobby Trevino was an amazing player at UMass. I think he plays like third or fourth line for the Wolfpack. So it just goes to show you, like, you know, no matter how amazing you are in college, it's the pro game is tough. You're playing grown men. It's a lot of physical, a lot of travel. So a lot more games too. So, but yeah, hopefully those guys make it up to Hershey. I think the, you know, that'd be kind of cool to see him play there for sure.
Yeah. I just feel like, I will say, like, I feel like I like watching college hockey way more than minor league hockey. I know minor league hockey is technically better, but there's something about college hockey that you can't replace in minor league hockey.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, they both have pros and cons. I think the atmospheres are phenomenal in college. But in terms of, it is noticeable, like, the difference in skill and stuff like that between, like, you know,
at least in the AHL. ECHL is a little more similar, I felt like.
Yeah, you could notice in the AHL, like, the crispness of the passes, the hardness of the shots, like, the hits and everything. Like, you could notice the difference between college. And that's what I mean. Like I said, Bobby Trevino, I mean, he ran college hockey for a couple of years at UMass, and like I said, I think he's like a third liner with the Wolfpack, so it's a different game for sure.
Awesome. Well, it's great having you on, Kevin. Thank you so much for your time. He'll be on next episode as well, as we preview Alaska Anchorage and UNH again and recap hopefully a good series sweep up in Durham this weekend. The games are at 7 p.m. on Friday night, and then it's 4 p.m. on Saturday as well, both in Durham, both on ESPN+. And then the women's team plays against ranked Northeastern on Friday at Toscano, and then they play Holy Cross on Saturday at Toscano as well. So some fun weekend for UConn hockey coming up.
Yeah, man, like I said, heading up to Durham. Can't wait. Hopefully come back with a couple dubs. It'll be my second-to-last Hockey East arena I got to check off my list is the Whittemore Center, so... then it's just Songus, and I've been to Songus before, just not for the Riverhawks. So, yeah, hopefully we go up there, handle business this weekend, and then at least the next two are at home after that. So just got to take it one game at a time, like Cav says.
Yeah, absolutely. I will be watching the series as well from my house. I've never been to UNH, and it's a tough drive, but I'll make it there one day. But I will be going to the women's game on Friday. I want to try to boost them up a little bit and hopefully beat a really good Northeastern team on Friday. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Good luck to the women. I know Northeastern is just like a wagon in women's hockey. So.
Oh, it's insane. They have like some of the best players in the country there. So.
Yeah. All right, so go Ice Bus. You got a smile that makes the sun rise.